Welcome, everybody,
to
the Hip-Hop Show, hip-hop's finest hour on the radio. Today, we got Son Pablo Escobar on the show as guest appearance, Juan Pablo Escobar. I'm going to start getting him on the show shortly. And make sure to go online. Go on outthegutta.com. Purchase my greatest hits. One of my 1,000 copies. They're going quick. So make sure to do that. And then also anybody looking to buy my limited edition shoes or glasses or anything else, I got everything on there. Also, the Glory to God was added on there a couple weeks ago, so make sure to buy that. And then also, Thug Life Volume 2 is on there on the homepage. Greatest Hits, that's on the homepage of the site, so make sure to buy that before they're gone. All the limited edition shoes, all the limited edition glasses. I'm going to get to Pablo. Let's go.
All right. So after the death of your father, you got on the radio and you said, I'm going to avenge my father's death. I'm going to kill the bastards, the motherfuckers who did this. I'm going to rise up. I'm going to be more dangerous than my father. How big a mistake was that?
Well, man, it's perhaps one of the biggest mistakes I ever committed in my life. You know, just let's say that 5 seconds of threats became in 25 years of exile, man, and didn't stop yet. So I learned a lot from those words, you know, from the power of a declaration and how this could really affect your present, your future, and how this can put your life in danger too. Perhaps I wasn't realizing that I was, you know, the son of Pablo Escobar. Perhaps if, you know, a teenager received the same bad news that his father passed away, perhaps he could react the same as I did. But not being the son of Pablo Escobar, people won't take that seriously. But, you know, I didn't realize that what I was doing, what I was saying, what I was thinking were going to affect so much my own destiny. And I could tell you that those wars for sure affected my destiny in many ways, but also gave me the opportunity to make the call again and to realize that that wasn't the path for me and that wasn't the future that I wanted to build. So I call again to the media and I said, I apologize for what I've just said and I want to make peace and I want to be committed with peace. And that's what I've been doing for the past 26 years of my life. But of course, people remembers me for just, you know, for those threats, for sure.
So the Cali cartel, they had a death sentence on you after that. And they were allied with the Castaño brothers, with Don Berna. The Castaño brothers with Los Pepes said they were going to cut you up and your sister up into little pieces and send them to Pablo in a sack. Now, your mother talked to the Cali guys and arranged for you to have a sit down with them to see if they would spare your life. How did it feel to go to that meeting thinking you were never going to come out, possibly alive?
Well, imagine yourself being invited to a meeting where you already know and totally positive that you're not going to come out alive. Will you go to that meeting, Sean? I don't know.
It seems like you didn't have much of a choice.
Well, I did, you know, and that was perhaps the worst part, you know, because, of course, I have always the choice to be Pablo Escobar 2.0, and sadly, I had the know-how because, you know, I was very next to my father, and I was watching how he handled all of these things. At the same time, I was totally afraid of what was going to happen to me. And I have to say that it was thanks to my father's enemies' advices that I decided to go to that meeting. Because at the beginning, when I was invited, let's say, they were treating me bad, insulting me, threatening me all the time. But suddenly, everybody calmed down and get outside of the prison that I was visiting when I received the message. And one of the guys approached to me and they said, "Hey, look, man, you don't realize that you are already dead and that the only chance to get out alive is to be sharp on that meeting. So be there, because that's the only way out." And it makes a lot of sense to me, so I wrote my own will when I was 16, and I decided to go to face death, because I was also tired of running away from the sins that I wasn't responsible for. So for me, it was also what an adventure, what a challenge that I had to face in front of me. But, thanks to that meeting, I realized that I could have a second chance, the right to own and to develop the second chance of being another human being, a different one, and to start over. So I took that opportunity, and I thank my father's enemies for allowing me to stay alive, and I honor that opportunity. I became an architect, an industrial designer, a writer, and I'm just trying to use my father's story in the most responsible way so we could, move forward and learn from it.
So you tried to get out of the country multiple times. And there was one time where you were at the airport and you guys were queuing up to get on the airplane, and then you got searched and they made you miss the airplane. And then the Los Pepes guys showed up. How did you manage to save your family in that situation?
Well, man, I felt, I remember that when I had the opportunity to escape from that situation, imagine an international airport that was in control of terrorists. And the authorities, even instead of stopping them, were helping them. It's a very awkward situation. And you are just a single family, and I was 16. And my little sister, she has like 10, 11 years, something like that. And I was surrounded by women of my family members. I don't know how it came up to my mind that the only way out was to rent a helicopter, So I found somebody who offered me help in front of a lot of policemen who wanted me dead, of course. And he said that he could get me an office and a telephone. So I don't know, just in a minute, I realized that the only way out was just to rent a helicopter and escape from all of them. Because, we had no bodyguards at that time. Nobody could give us any protection. My father was losing the control of the country. He wasn't the powerful man that everyone knew and expected to be in that time. So we were truly surrounded, and I don't know, it's a miracle that I can speak with you today, man, because I should have died that day exactly, as many other opportunities happened to me too. But I remember that when I managed to escape, the same day I was with my father, and he congratulated me just because, how I handled the situation. He couldn't, even believe it. How could I? But I said to him, I learned from you, you're a good man in terms of how to escape from danger and authorities. And I just did the same, but we were totally surrounded, more than 100 policemen and more than 50 people with guns and with, their face cover. You couldn't not see and realize if they were bandits or, or agents. You couldn't figure it out who they were, but for sure they had no good intentions of being there. And it didn't happen in the middle of the night, man. It was just like during the morning, in front of thousands of people and airline employees, many people there who saw and witnessed all of this. And it was You know, the terror was taking control of the country, and there was two sides of terror, my father's side and the other side, you know, and it was a very awkward situation, but finally God helped us and we could manage to escape from there, but it was quite a challenge for sure.
Going back to an earlier year then, a pivotal moment in Pablo's career was the assassination of Lara Bonilla. Things really changed after that. So you guys had to leave the country in a hurry. Your mother was pregnant. How did it feel to be on that journey to Panama?
Well, man, I remember that we were forced to take a helicopter that from my father. And it's like suddenly all your life, as you know it, changed without notice. And you know, I was going to school every single day, having my family, my home, as I knew it since I was very, very, very young. So suddenly I was forced to change our home. And we went to a farm where we took the helicopter and we went to Panama. And we have to dress like if we were tourists, you know, next to some near beach, it was there. So when the police stopped us, they thought that we were just, you know, diving and doing something like that. But it was thanks to the General Noriega, who was helping my father and allowing him and his organization to stay there. But he was working also like a double agent, because at the same time he was a CIA agent. So it was a very awkward and difficult moment. And that's exactly the point in my life where I realized who my father was, you know, because in the meantime, I was just joining my father for his political campaigns, and everybody was saying, Pablo, thank you very much. You're helping a lot of people. So I was just hearing a lot of good things about my father. But this was the start. This was the beginning when I realized to know my father even better. And he approached me and he said, look, son, I want you to know what I do. And I am a bandit and this is what I do for a living. So since that moment, he started sharing with me the news, and we saw the TV news, we read the newspaper together, and he didn't have any problem to recognize his responsibility for most of the news that we were reading. So it was a moment that allowed me also to know better who my father was. And I know that some people, they say that I don't know anything about my father, but they don't know my relationship with him and how direct and honest and he was with me, you know, because I don't know many fathers who could approach to their own sons and say, hey, I killed this guy and I am responsible for this cocaine or not. You know, I don't know many guys who could do that. Now that I am a father, I think, how should I tell my son if I commit a crime, you know, will I talk to him in the same way that my father did it? I don't know, man. I think it's very, very hard. But I believe that also my father was just trying to be my father, and being honest with me was a way of showing me respect, I believe.
Who do you believe trafficked the most drugs in the 1980s, your father or George H.W. Bush and the CIA?
You did your homework, man. Well, I really don't know who handled more, but it's difficult to count how many kilos that did everyone deliver in those times. But you remember, you know, there was a big fight, you know, against the socialism in Central America during the 80s. So the CIA was using the drug trafficking business, and also they were like in the middle of a exchange between drugs and guns, so they will support the right-wing groups so they could kill all the lefties. So that's, let's say, the excuse to be part of the drug trafficking business to finance all these wars against the leftists in Central America in those times. And of course, my father was part of it. And as I published in my second book, that is not being translated in English yet, I can imagine why. the thing is that we should take this in a relaxed way, but it's a hard story to tell. You know, my father was, and there's pictures that Barry Seal, the CIA agent, took from an airplane that my father actually bought from the CIA, and he was sending drugs to the United States with those kind of planes. But of course, the CIA put a hidden camera inside of it and took several pictures of my father and some people of the Nicaraguan government, and even another partner of my father called the Mexican, AKA the Mexican, Gonzalo Rodriguez Gacha. And what it's interesting for me about those pictures is that you can see the right wing, the left wing, the drug dealers, the army, the government, everybody together, you know, just after the money. It's like there's no, doesn't matter who believes in the right wing's ideas or the left wing, whatever. It's just only one thing that bring everybody together, and it's money, you know. And that's, you know, I feel a little bit disappointed because I thought that, you know, their ideas were stronger than that. But, you know, at the end, money is like the whatever is the only thing that matters, sadly.
Your father said that those photos were fake because he's never carried the drugs himself. Are you saying that the photos were real?
Well, the photos are real, and he said that he never carried the drugs into the plane, but because the soldiers were doing that part of the job, you know.
Okay.
So he wasn't lying. It was okay. The soldiers who were helping him.
So you've met a lot of the victims of people who were assassinated. Did you meet Barry Seal's son?
Yes, actually, we are pretty close friends, and I'm happy to say that, man. And I should say that Aaron Seal, his son, he teach me perhaps one of the most important lessons for me in terms of reconciliation and forgiveness. And I thought that I knew something about asking forgiveness and reconcile with people, but, you know, this guy is truly amazing, because the first message that I received from him was, he was asking me to forgive his own father just because he was willing to talk about my own father against him in a U.S. court. So he asked me to forgive his own father even when my father was the one who killed his own guys, you know, his own father. So for me, it was like very hard to receive and to process that message, because I wasn't expecting so much kindness, and, you know, I don't know even how to describe this, his heart, man, because he's, and also his mother, and actually they both contact the guys who pulled the trigger and killed his dad and husband in that time, and they got in contact in those times, and they said, we forgive you, we have nothing against you, it's God's will, and we know that's their words. And they said, we know that our father took decisions in life that, you know, bring him a lot of problems, and it was thanks to his own decisions that this unhappy ending, for sure. So that really inspired me, you know, to continue working with my father's victims, and so far, and thank God that today I have met like 150 families. All of them suffer, you know, kidnaps and murder, many, many crimes committed against them. And thank God the success rate of those conversations at 100%. So that keep me going in that path of forgiveness and peace, man.
That's really powerful. What motivated you to meet the victims' family members in the first place?
Well, man, I felt like silence will kill me, you know. If I stay in total silence for life, that will kill me in a way, and I couldn't stand up. And so I took a decision. I told this to my mother, and I said to her, look, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I feel the need to ask for forgiveness, even if I didn't commit any crime against them. But I believe that somebody has to take responsibility for this, and nobody's doing it, and who else is going to do it, you know? And I got her support and my sister's too. And after that, you know, I start realizing that perhaps the best way to approach to them was telling my own story through a documentary that was called Sins of My Father. And suddenly, during the year 2009, we finally published the documentary. So that gave us the perfect opportunity and excuse to approach to those families. And that encouraged me also to write a letter to them. And after that, you know, I could have a meeting in Colombia after 14 years of not being able to come back to my own country. And when I took the decision to come back, you know, I was feeling a lot of fear, because when I left my country, they said to me, if you ever come back, we will kill you. That's it. And so I promised not to come back again, ever. So I was not keeping that promise, and I was facing a lot of danger. But for me, I thought, and I was totally sure, that it was more important to face that danger, but because I was seeking forgiveness and reconciliation with my father's victims. So there was nothing else more important than that.
Well, fantastic work that you're doing there. Another life and death situation was when the Cali cartel bombed a house your dad had left in the morning, and the roof was off. You guys were looking at the sky, and the way your mother described it, that you basically a Botero statue had saved your life because you were pinned down by a slab. Mm-hmm. What happened next?
Well, man, you know, nobody ever in that time in Colombia have heard, you know, a car bomb explosion. Nobody. So when we were in the middle, we were totally confused. I cannot tell you that I hear the bomb sound. No, I heard nothing. I just felt that I couldn't breathe because, you know, the weight of the ceiling was just, you know, against me, and I was in bed next to my mother. She managed to escape, and thanks to her strength and I think thanks for the love and the adrenaline that she felt in that moment, she saved my life. And I thought that there was an earthquake, man. I never expected a bomb, never in my life. You know, I was just, you know, you can hear a lot of shootings in Colombia, but not bombs. It didn't happen in that time. So we thought that it was an earthquake, and I thought that we were trapped in the basement because all the buildings fell. I don't know. I was just imagining things. I couldn't see anything. There was a lot of dust and glasses everywhere. Everything was destroyed. It's quite a surreal image, because when you go to bed, you know, what's the last thing you look? You know, you look your own ceiling, and suddenly somebody took it out, and now you just get up from bed and you see the sky. What happened here, man? It's like another miracle. And so this is the kind of stories that I took from my own experience and my own life to say that I should show a lot of respect, not only to my own life, but also to the rest of the lives that were affected by all of this violence. So it was quite an experience, another miracle in my life. I have the pictures, and I'm willing to show with the public and with you some of them, because only when you can see them, you would see that how can you, you know, still be alive after suffering that kind of situation. So it was amazing to survive and to, you know, I remember that I walked, we were in a very high floor, but we need to use the stairs, and the stairs were full of, you know, broken glasses, and I wasn't wearing any shoes, and I cannot show you a single scar, man. And you know, nothing happened to me, not even to my mother, not even to my little sister. So there's no other way to call this but as a miracle.
I'm curious, I've often wondered why Pablo didn't bomb the houses of the families of the Cali cartel, because Gilberto called him the next day and he realized it was Cali. Why did he not retaliate right away and bomb their families' houses?
Well, my father was a man of his word, and he made a promise to his own enemies that the war was going to be against them, but not against their families. And even if they attacked his own family, he was willing to respect that. And he many times told me, "I know where their sons live. I know their relatives. I know all the address, but I'm not going to hurt them because they made this promise. And it's another way to keep you safe." But, you know, they never respect that condition. The only one who was still respecting that condition was my father, because they do attack us many times. They were hiring policemen to kidnap us and to make us a lot of harm, even the army. There was a lot of corruption, you know. The difference between my father and the Cali cartel, let's say, it's my father was willing to take control of the country, fighting against the institutions, and the Cali cartel was willing to do the same, but buying the institutions. That's the big difference, let's say. They have a more businessman approach for that kind of intentions that my father was more like a warrior in that, if you can call him like that.
And Manuela, she injured her ear in the explosion. And having read so much about Manuela when she was a kid and your dad playing with you guys, I often wonder now, how is your sister doing now?
Well, she's well. Actually, you know, that's part of the myth. You know, my little sister, thank God, she didn't suffer anything about her ear.
Oh, really?
Actually, yeah. That's just part of the gossips, you know, that you can hear in the media, and there are a lot of them. And my little sister is good. She's handling well her own life. So, but I know that she decided not to be so public as I do, because she's, I don't know, we respect her decision, and she also supports us with everything that we are doing as a family. But we can understand her that, you know, she was a little girl when all this happened, has different memories and experiences. Even if we suffer the same ones, of course, she was even younger, so she got more affected for sure. But at the same time, I was the one who got, you know, affected in one of in my 2 ears, let's say. But I didn't realize this until recently, because I was just hearing a noise inside of me. I didn't know what was going on, and the noise stay there like for 5 days. So I went to see the doctor, and I want to know what's going on, what happened. So they make me some tests, and they realized that I lost 50% of my hearing capacity in one of my ears and 60% in the other one. So I asked the doctor, but, you know, I can hear you perfectly well, and I'm not complaining that I cannot hear. So he explained to me that there are some frequencies that you can hear, and that so he told me, "I hope you're not planning to play the violin, because you will not be able to do it." But so I tell this guy, "Look, as long as I can hear you, for me, it's fine. So perhaps I can hear some music and I can lose some parts of it."
Do you think that injury came from the bombing of the house or from other situations?
For me, it was sure that it was, you know, it was the only time in my life that I was, you know, exposed to that kind of explosion. Just to remember, 1 kilometer away from the site, from the exact place of the explosion, all the glasses of the city, all the windows were broken, just because of the explosion. So imagine if you are exactly in the middle when that happens.
Wow.
And, you know, it's. I wonder how, you know, how I can still hear you well, man.
What do you say to all these young men who watch Narcos and want to be like your father?
Well, man, I should say that sadly, they are not telling the truth about how we live that experience. They are not being accurate. They are not respecting my father's story, my country's story, and they are just glorifying him. They made a great product in terms of entertainment that has been very successful. Nobody can deny that. But also, it's not educating well the youngest audience, because they truly believe that everything they saw on Narcos is absolutely truth. And as you tell me, as you told me in the beginning, you know, I've been receiving hundreds and thousands of messages every single day through the social media. And most of them, they say, it's so cool, I just watched Narcos and I want to be like your dad. Like, you know, it's just like, hey man, this is not Superman. I mean, this is a different story. And if you truly know, want to know the story, please come and join me and read my books, or just be present at one of my lectures, and I will tell you the truth. Because, you know, I had the chance to be even somebody worse and dangerous than my father, but I didn't take that path because I was truly aware of the consequences. And I received great feedback from my books. You know, the readers, the youngest readers, they sent me letters and they said that they were willing to be like my father, but only they stopped thinking like that after they had the opportunity to approach to my story through my books. So that's why I keep promoting my books, because I know that finally I handle to deliver a message that is totally responsible, that is not encouraging others to follow my father's examples in life, and that it's helping a lot of people to be aware of the consequences of trying to be involved in a business and in a life. You know, my father is being portrayed like he's a very successful man. And I don't think, you know, even if he made so much money, but what's the point? You know, what's success for you in life? I think that's a success, at least for me. It's something that you can truly enjoy during all time. But if you can't, what's the purpose of having, you know, tons of money, but you cannot enjoy any single dollar, and you are starving, but you, instead of, you know, you are starving and at the same time you have $4 million in cash in front of you, and you cannot buy just a single piece of bread with that money. So what's the point of, you know, having all of those assets? It's not a good way to do it. And I tell those guys, and I invite them, and I said to them, look, if you feel talented enough to be a drug dealer, with half of your talent, you can be a very successful man in life, and you will have your freedom and your family to enjoy that.
Yeah, it ends in the prison, police, and death. That's what I tell the kids in this country. So as a kid for you then, what was it like growing up with hitmen around the house? I'm thinking of characters like Popeye, Earring, El Chapo, Mugre. These guys were babysitting you, playing games. What was that like?
Well, they were truly, as I call them, my killer knives. You know, it's like, I didn't have any friends. You know, they were my friends. I grew up with most of them, and not with Popeye, because he was being part of the cartel, but later on, not from the beginning. But I know that he talked much more than he knew. That's the reality. But it was a very awkward situation, imagine. I was just a kid surrounded by bodyguards, all of them consuming cocaine, marijuana, with guns in their hands, and not the best examples you would want to have for your kid. But that was the life that I was living, and of course, I didn't have an option. It was my place of birth. That's it, you know. You can choose your friends, but your family, that's something, at least as far as we know, we cannot do.
With the assassination of presidential candidate Galán, there was a chart drawn up by the cops, and they had like Pablo and Gacha at the top saying these are the guys responsible. But General Maza is in prison, Santo is in prison, and Maza was the, you know, equivalent to the head of the FBI. Santo was the politician, the liberal candidate. How did the people who the public thought were the good guys end up in prison for the murder they said your dad did?
Well, that's a, you know, it's a very complex case, you know, because a lot of people, of course, the authorities at the beginning, it was easy for them, you know, everything that happened in Colombia, they just, you know, accused my father of being responsible of. But, and many times, you know, it was next to my father, and I used to say to him, hey, why don't you defend yourself? Why don't you say the truth? And he said, it will cost me another war against this family, the Castaño family, or the other family, just to defend myself. So it's better to keep it that way. And I also understood that my father was taking the power that was given to him just by the media. So that would make him look like even a more dangerous person. And he was using that in his own favor to force the government to do whatever he wanted, and also the politicians. And but of course, in the middle, there's a lot of corruption. I know that General Mata was convicted for this criminal act against Luis Carlos Galán, the presidential candidate, and also who you call Santos is Santofimio, Alberto Santofimio, another politician. I wrote in my first book, you know, about a short line about Santofimio, and not I should say I don't like this guy, and I don't need to be his lawyer. He had his own lawyer, but you know, I don't believe everything that I saw, that everything that comes from the Colombian justice and from the Latin American justice and from many other countries, you have to be very careful of what you read, because they said that he encouraged my father to kill Luis Carlos Galán. And let me tell you one thing. My father was a man who took his own decisions. He never asked for anyone's permission or approval. You know, he just wanted Galán dead, and Galán was dead. You know, one of his friends, of my father's friends, asked him, hey, Pablo, what are you going to do? Because you know Galán is going to be the next president of Colombia. And so my father answered to his friend, a dead man can't be a president, you know. So he was taking control of Colombia. He was the man taking decisions. He was also dictating the decrees published by Gaviria's government. And let me tell you, there's a lot of decrees, 303, 2747, many, many government decrees that were published because my father was the one telling to the government what to say in his own favor and how this will be made like a tailor-made dress for him. You know, it's like just he could present to the authorities, surrender to them. It was politically correct. You know, it was shown to the press, Pablo Escobar surrenders to the government. But it was exactly the opposite. You know, that was how it was presented to the media. But the truth, it was that Colombia was surrendering to Pablo Escobar. That was the big difference. And of course, you know, the details of the crime, I handled to talk a lot about this in my books. And I understand that it's difficult to understand how the ones who were supposed to be the good guys finally, they got involved into this. But there are a lot of side stories that relate them to Galán. Let's say something, you know. I know that General Massa didn't want Galán to be the president because the day that Galán will arrive to the presidency, the first guy who will be kicked out of the government and the power was going to be General Massa. So, you know, and of course he said, I am the most, I was one of the biggest enemies against Pablo Escobar. How should I help him, etc. But there was another, a lot of, you know, the Castaño brothers. The Castaño brothers, they had a lot of power, and they make, with the Mexican, Gonzalo Rodriguez Gacha, they do a lot of the operation that finally got Galán killed. So there's a lot of stories. It's a very complex story because a lot of people is like in the middle, and it's difficult to understand. But you know, it's very interesting to bring the puzzle and all the pieces together so we can rebuild the story and the image of what really happened.
Was Mazza working for Cali?
Yes. Yes, my father used to say that many, many times. Of course, Mazza denies that, but, you know, I've been talking with William Rodriguez Abadia, the son of the Cali cartel, the son of Miguel Rodriguez, one of the bosses. And, of course, you know, they own the country, truly own the country, the Supreme Court, the district attorney office, the government, the policemen, the militaries. They truly were the owners of Colombia. As I told you from the beginning, they were trying to, you know, to infiltrate all the Colombian institutions thanks to corruption, and they did it very, very well. And of course, my father was fighting against that, and he was just shooting everyone. So, of course, I thought that the Cali cartel was going to succeed, you know, for many, many years, but they just last for, let's say, 2 years after my father's death, you know.
Do you think Popeye exaggerated Santo's role in the Galán assassination for his own benefit so he could get out of prison?
Yeah, well, you know, it's this guy lied a lot, man, a lot. He was, you know, he was a bandit, you know, and bandits do things for money. And just, you know, he passed away, and I would like to leave him rest in peace. But I know bandits. I grew up between all of them. I know them, how they think, how they act, how they behave. And when this kind of bandit, without loyalty, they will do whatever it takes to have more money, and they will lie against you, against anyone you could ask, if you gave them money. And so he was given information to the Colombian authorities about the activities of Medellin cartel from the year 1984, but he was part of the cartel only until 1988. So how could you trust a guy like him?
So out of all of the people who worked for your father, who was the most loyal?
Well, I think that I remember John Jairo Arias Transcon, Pinina. Perhaps he was one of the most loyal men that he had, and even the most dangerous too. Even he dared to say one day that once the authorities or the enemies got him, Pablo was going to lose the war, and that was exactly what started to happen, because Pinina was the guy in the streets, you know, doing all the things for him. And there was another guy, but he was more like a friend. It was my uncle, Mario Henao, from my mother's side. And they were truly good friends, and my father was paying a lot of attention to Mario's advices, because perhaps he was the only one who wasn't applauding for his violence, and etc. So I think that the most important men in my father's life, in terms of, you know, his operations, let's say from the military part, was Pinina for sure, and from the friends part, from the good advice and from trying to be a wiser man, was Mario now, my uncle.
Back to the music.
Man, imagine this world with no guns, no fight, no diseases. That's a world I would want to live in. Everybody would want to live in. Imagine no guns, imagine no fight, imagine no diseases, imagine that life. Imagine that life. Imagine no guns, imagine no fights, imagine no disease, imagine that life. Imagine that life. Imagine that life. Imagine the world with no haters. Would you still be motivated to ball with paper? Imagine the streets free from police sirens and cop chases. Imagine if pop was alive. Will rappers be as hot? Imagine if Jeezy went pop. with the trap still pop. Imagine if Vicky didn't get shot. Would him and Puff still rock? Imagine if that disease didn't take my pop. I could still hear him say I love you a lot. Imagine if John Lennon didn't make it magic. Would you still imagine? Imagine if there was no Gucci or True Religion fabric. Imagine if Jesus walked amongst us. Would you still wear crosses? Imagine owning your own everything. No work, no bosses.
Imagine no guns.
Imagine no fights. Imagine no disease. Imagine that life. Imagine that life. Imagine no guns. Imagine no fights. Imagine no disease. Imagine that life. Imagine that life. Imagine that life. Imagine me at the top with no bottom in sight. Imagine me living with no problems in life. Imagine the wars, no soldiers that I fight. Imagine if there wasn't a day or a night. Imagine if there wasn't a Satan or a Christ. Imagine if Eazy-E didn't succumb to AIDS. Would it still be an NWA? Imagine all the homeless people have enough place to stay. Imagine everybody having enough food on their plate. Imagine looking in the mirror, not seeing your face. Imagine if my great-grandma was alive, would she still make sure I'm straight? Imagine if every day had an earthquake. Imagine if everybody was real instead of a snake.
Imagine no guns, imagine no fights. Imagine no disease, imagine that life. Imagine that life. Imagine no guns, imagine no fights. Imagine no disease, imagine that life. Imagine that life. Imagine that life. Imagine no guns, imagine no fights. Imagine no disease, imagine that life. Imagine that life. Imagine no guns, imagine no fights. Imagine no disease, imagine that life. Imagine that life. Imagine that life.
I just hit a lick like a lollipop. Left into the bank, funny bone, that's a lot of guac. Racks on racks on racks, I'm back, I'm back, I'm back. Still fresh from yesterday, more licks on the way. My girl just licked away, I put kids on her face. Mr. Duncan Hines, I put icing on the cake. Plotting half the day, how I'm about to get this mat today. Hot and scorching, falling in, I'm Jordan. Haters grill me like a foreman. Cause I'd rather die enormous than live dormant. Hitting licks, counting chips, my kingdom is forming. The top's so lonely, I'm free from the torment.
Y que por la puta mi nombre mencione. Tú siempre pichas en la mía, tranquilo. Si soy lo Luyan que te engancha este rabo de oro en el cuello y ahora pasa un kilo. Uy, siempre de estelar. Si no me creo preguntar en el Banco Popular. Los topos de fui nunca de regular. Esto es hasta alguien que uno va a jugar. Dando más palo que David Ortiz. Ando con los pibes locos dentro le tiro a Kiss. Me acostumbré modelo con flow de París. Yeah. El más odio Donald Trump. Aceite en el vapor ya no fumo un plon. Lo pongo a danzar duro como Tom. Me tocan y adelante el Armagedón.
Ballin' like I'm Jordan, 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 ballin' like I'm Jordan. Hoy estoy aquí imaginando, sexy baila y me da las ganas. Yo baila y me deja con las ganas. Qué bien te queda a ti esa palita. Ella es señora, no es señorita. Sexy baila y me deja con las ganas. Cómo te luces cuando lo meneas. Cuánto quisiera hacerte el amor. Enséñame lo que sabes.
Heart trying to turn me into the old me. I'm trying to stay the new me. I see my day once turning on me slowly. We don't even talk no more. We used to be my brody. Chase the bag, bro. She ain't gonna leave you lonely. Choose paper. I know money ain't gonna switch up on me. Money talks. I pray my money don't stutter. Stay with the stick. You iron mine. You gonna get hit with the putter. I don't trust these hoes, so I wear rubber on rubber. I got your bitch under my covers while you text her that you love her.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain. The only thing that's real.
They say it's lonely at top, so I went and brought my people with me. The whole fam, all the homies getting jiggy with me. If we starve together, then you definitely eating with me. And make it up, you're definitely leaving with me. We grind together, shine together, how it is, homie. Seen fakes, seen snakes, turning on me slowly. Big love to my OGs, who ain't never stopped believing in me. Y'all keep me pushing, made me a beast. Wake up, Siemens and E. Cooking in the studio, trying to fuck up the summer.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real.
The Hypnotic Show, hip hop's finest hour on the radio. I want to thank Juan Pablo Escobar for being the guest appearance on the show today. And then tomorrow at 8 p.m., got Sandra Bullock. That's going to be the guest appearance. And then Saturday at 8 p.m., Jennifer Lawrence. Sunday at 8 p.m., my two-hour gospel special that I do every Sunday. Don't want to miss it. And then also want to make sure you go on outthegutta.com and purchase my greatest hits, one of my 1,000 physical copies that's signed. There's a lot of other great advantages that come with it, a lot of great benefits. So make sure to get them before they're gone, because there's only 1,000 and they're going quick. Once they're done, they're gone. Super rare. Definitely want to make sure to get it. Also, go on Cameo. Hire me on Cameo. Go on cameo.com. And then you could hire me there if you want me to sing happy birthday or send a shout out or something. Or go check out me and MJ on K9 Magazine. On our July issue that we're on the cover, you can go to k9magazine.com or go to k9magazine.com/hypnotic and then go directly to the interview. Also, make sure to download and get Money Never Sleeps everywhere online. And then the Outcome, the double CD, make sure to purchase that. That's everywhere too, iTunes and everywhere. Could definitely find it. And then also make sure to go on outthegutta.com and purchase my ringtones or anything. Do the drunk walk, broke over 1 billion purchases. I'm waiting for the plaque for that. And then anybody that's trying to play anything on my show, send it to hypnoticshow@outlook.com. Again, hypnoticshow@outlook.com. So definitely send that. And then also make sure to go on moneytalksmagazine.com, or you could actually go to Money Talks, go on Barnes & Noble, and you could purchase one of the last issue of Money Talks, which actually has Money Talks Magazine, where it has my article on there for my column for the Hypnotic Show, where we celebrated the 50 years of hip-hop. So you definitely want to get that before they're gone. And then also, it's, you know, interviewed Nas in that one. So definitely make sure to get it. And then tomorrow, stay tuned. Talk to you guys tomorrow. Sandra Bullock, guest appearance on the Hypnotic Show. Hip-hop's finest hour on the radio.